Wow, that was some really clear advice. I feel like I understand exactly what to do right now based on that very helpful video from Twitter.
It's pretty much, I know what to do now. I mean, I should go outside unless I shouldn't go outside. And I should homeschool my children unless I'm working.
From home.
From home. So, I mean, I feel pretty good.
Yeah.
I think I know the path forward.
I appreciate it. Yeah. So, welcome to Business Speed. I'm Ian Barrett.
I'm Aaron Hayes.
And we have the lovely Mr. Ginsburg here with David Ginsburg here with us.
Hello.
Man, wow, another week. I think last week was probably the rage level episode of Business Speed.
We hit 11, I think. I hit 11 with my rage.
Right.
I was right there with you.
But you know what? But the rage, I mean, we all felt it. We all knew it wasn't an okay thing to feel. And I think for us, it's really motivated us, okay, figure out what is the next step. This is not going to go away. I mean, especially, you know, Baker announced that we're going to go another 2 weeks. So we have another 2 weeks of this.
Yeah, for sure, which is,
I
disagree with it. I'm actually happy with that. I will let you know that this morning I deleted every person that posted how many people died of the flu last year as some sort of response to this closings. And they're now deleted from my Facebook because I'm not even having this conversation. And the reason I'm not having this conversation is because we hit the threshold today, this week, which is that more Americans have died as a result of coronavirus right now than Vietnam War. So we're taping this on Wednesday. So by the end of the week, we should be at that number. We're at 60,000. What took 8 years of armed combat to tear this country apart, we've actually done in 3 months, basically. So I'm beyond explaining it to people. I'm beyond defending it. We're in a brand new world now, and we're going to be there for a long time. What do you think, David?
I agree. I think the real number is much higher. People that have died from the virus. These people are dying before getting tested, and they just chalked it up to whatever the listed cause of death was. And I agree with you. I've learned slowly but painfully to shy away from the social media arguments because there's people that just live in a different universe. They want to believe this alternate reality that everything is fine. It's, you can equate it to the flu or to drowning in a swimming pool or car accidents. It's nonsense. And we don't have time for nonsense anymore. Focus on what we can control, which is our own response to the virus and to the shutdown orders and how we can mitigate and manage our own lives to have some quality of life and protect ourselves and our loved ones and avoid the noise that's out there, because you're not going to change somebody's mind that believes that it's a hoax or that Bill Gates has developed both the vaccine or the virus and the vaccine, and for some unknown reason yet he's controlling both. None of it makes any sense, but those conspiracy theories are everywhere. Just avoid them. It's a waste of all of our time. We should be focusing on how we can move forward collectively from a business standpoint, from a human standpoint, what's going to take place over the next few months before a vaccine is even being tested and available. As the shutdown orders get lifted, how can we adjust to the new normal? Because to your earlier point, Ian, this isn't going to change. We're not going to suddenly snap back to the way things were ever. You're not going to go to a concert for another year in all likelihood. And we have to adjust to that and find ways to keep ourselves both entertained and engaged and, you know, fundamentally just considerate of one another as human beings. I feel like we've lost a bit of that society. There's been a, you know, me, and ignoring the communal picture.
So, I mean, I think that's absolutely true. It's where we are right now, where we need to find what's the next thing, what's the solution, what can we do? It's we've been through several weeks of a lot of can'ts, shouldn'ts, don'ts, some fear. And as you said, this isn't going to go away. This is a new, I hate saying the new normal. It's so overused.
This is reality now.
Yeah.
It's not the new normal. I think that, once again, that was one of the phases.
Yeah.
This is reality. We need to accept it. We have to move on. And like any situation, this is the part in the movie where you can't convince the other guy that we have to leave the beach now. We got to go where no one's going to rescue us. We got to go and we got to make our own way. And we have to do it with like-minded people who want to be progressive. You own businesses. You have families. Here's the reality. You cannot go back to plan A. Plan A doesn't exist anymore. Plan A went over the guardrail, rolled down the mountain, is on fire at the bottom of the ravine right now. That's plan A. And every time somebody says more people died of the flu last year than of coronavirus, they're thinking that plan A is going to come back. It's never going to come back. It's already gone. So if you're not thinking about plan B, D, E, J,
right.
You know, you're singing yourself a song that you're making up as you go on. It's never going to go back. It can't. Businesses will fail. Infrastructures will change, and we're seeing that right now. And if you rely on those things to be there to be where we were 12 months ago, it's just not going to exist. It's not going
to
be there.
So to that point, right. I think it would be great to talk about these new models. Like what are the new businesses that have found ways to thrive and survive?
Speaking of the new model, the new way, let's talk about the most important story in
the history of mankind.
The history of mankind, which is that trolls made $100 million.
Yes, we're back on trolls.
Well, like I said, we're talking about this. It's like they not only made their money, they did it with about this much distribution costs. You can't have that kind of success without a winner and a loser. And right now, the very
AMC.
Angry party is AMC Theaters.
And they're now saying that they refuse to ever play a Universal picture in their theater ever again
because they
were so successful and they cut them out of the deal. Now, I have a couple of feelings about this. I'm not saying Universal Pictures is this amazing company. They're a very wealthy company, so right off the bat, I'm suspect. But I will say what they did was something that we needed. As parents, we needed that release. We needed that entertainment. We needed something to tell our kids that they could look forward to. And
right.
For that, I'm very grateful. AMC was already on the brink of bankruptcy before this pandemic. And this is kind of what we're seeing. We're seeing companies that that weren't really running perfectly. They're either using this as an excuse or using this pandemic as an excuse for their failure, or they're innovating. They're doing one or the two. And I would say the AMC is pointing a finger and not innovating.
Right. And you know, at the end of the day, it's got to be a little bit difficult for them to figure out. They've built their whole life on brick and mortar. And what the pandemic has taught us is right now is that we're living in a more and more virtual world where we're connected through the internet and we're connected through technology probably more than ever. It's so stark right now. What are the things that we need to contact each other for? We need to contact each other to actually purchase groceries from a grocery store. The things that we eat, the home goods supplies to the lumber, the things, the shingles for the roof, right? These are the things where we have to connect with another person, and that there are other ways to virtually do something. People are exploring it now, and there are business models that work around doing it this way.
We've seen a resurgence in drive-ins. People are buying drive-ins. Like that might be a thing again.
Right, so maybe AMC should have bought a drive-in or rented a drive-in and done that. And maybe we need to talk about what's the safe way to go do stuff. So once again, if you're arguing about why won't my business work the way it did 2 weeks ago, in December of 2019, then you're probably gonna be a very unhappy person for a long time because even if they turned everything off right now, there were zero cases, how long would it take to get back? Let's start thinking about what it looks like on the other side. So let's put up our crystal ball, David, and let's just look through and see where we're gonna be in 2021 and what can stay from the old way and what probably won't change. And I think that customer service and delivering directly to people works for people's lives. How we're doing the education works for people's lives right now. Understanding that childcare is part of the economy. It's not
right.
a nice thing to have.
It's not a nice to have.
I can't run an economy without effective childcare. You know, it's pretty clear at this point that everybody needs to be healthy. Otherwise, that wrecks your economy.
You know, I was reading an article in Axios this morning in preparation for the show. They were talking about how devastated the sharing economy has been, specifically things like Uber and WeWork and car sharing companies, you know, like Zipcar, because you're not going anywhere. You don't need a car. Airbnb has taken a $1 billion loans to sustain themselves, and they have new policies in place. They don't really know where, we don't know yet how badly they've been impacted financially, but that part is going to, it's unlikely that people realize they can work from home and still be productive, that they're going to go back to a WeWork giant space teeming with people that aren't maybe as sanitary as you are. How do we adjust that? At the same time, there's a sharing economy of the old ways of supporting your neighbor. I need flour. You have flour. Let me borrow a cup and just leave it on the front porch and I'll come and get it.
Right.
Yes,
right.
Exactly.
And that's where it's going to go. And one of the things that we've been talking about as well, that I've had this conversation with, I don't have kids, but a number of my friends obviously do, including you guys, and how your life has been radically revised by being with the kids all the time, and how it's a different structure, the frenetic pace of after school activities and sports and extra enrichment programs. And now you're home and the structure is broken a little bit, and it's a little bit of a slower pace of life. And it's actually been very healthy as a way to connect. And it's okay. You know, if you can have ice cream for breakfast, okay, once in a while, go ahead and do that. No one's going to penalize you for that. You're not a bad parent for
thank you, David.
Thank you. We appreciate it. Every day, David. If you were our kid, you could have ice cream every day.
And popcorn for dinner.
And popcorn for dinner. We don't care. You know, basically, we're trying to put a list of some of the things that we've seen that have worked. Like, one of the things that's pretty interesting is that the touring business has changed a lot. We do work with a lot. So the big concerts and whatnot, it's going to be a while for that to come back. But Post Malone did a fundraiser at his house, and basically in his little apartment in Los Angeles or whatever, in front of his mini bar. And he was able to raise $3 million doing Nirvana covers on a live stream. Wow, that's pretty powerful. It would take you couldn't ever clear $3 million renting out the House of Blues anywhere and trying to do a show. The infrastructure would be way too much. So maybe we need to start thinking about what is most appropriate live and what is most appropriate virtually.
Right.
Charlie XCX, who is a recording artist, did her new record in quarantine with her fans and was writing with the fans in the record, and now it's become kind of a community thing, and the fans are part of the process. And she's like, why didn't I do this before? Why didn't I never try this? And the reason people didn't think of doing these things before is because there are structures and infrastructures that basically say, if you want to go on tour, this is how you do it. If you want to make a record, this is how you do it. If you want to have a show, this is how you do it. And we said it 2 months ago, this is the ultimate disruption that's happening right now. And this disruption means that this gives you a new opportunity, a new way to go at anything you want to do. Do you think Universal wants to do it this way again, when they can go digitally direct and make $50 million in a weekend? Oh my God, I can't imagine that. Also, you're tapping audiences that you didn't have before, because you've been ignoring parents with kids, and we can't go to these things. And now suddenly we got to be part of the party. I get to see Post Malone doing Nirvana tunes, and I get to see Trolls, which I would never go see in a theater ever.
I would have gone, just FYI.
But so,
and that's a continuous loop at your house.
Right, right. Exactly. So,
but there are so many local entertainers as well who have really taken to this. I have a friend, she and her husband, she and her partner have a band, Army of Toys, and they've been doing really fantastic, fun shows every single night around 7 or 8, because they're both entertainers. Their entire income has been wiped out for the next 6 months, but this has been sustaining them. I mean, they're not millionaires, but they're able to feed their family from this, and they've really grown an incredible fan base from it, because it's every night, it's really entertaining, and it's real. I mean, they're being very real with the fans.
Our friend Adam Ezra, who is also a client, we made a video for him, just got written up in the Globe, because every night at 8 o'clock he does a concert. Other people are putting up their Patreons and whatever, and they're able to sustain themselves through smaller donations to a wider audience. So when Adam does his streams, he gets 8,000 people to watch him. So suddenly you're finding these massive audiences, and then people are providing a smaller amount of money, but all of a sudden now this is a different economy. So this is the new economy, virtual. I do through PayPal or Venmo or however I'm giving you the money, and there's a way to collect this. If I'm a venue, let's say like, Tupelo, maybe I need to start sponsoring virtual shows at my venue when time comes, and live streaming those to pay for my venue. So they have to start thinking about, not when can I get people in my club, how can I get my club to the people? We flip that around, right?
It comes back to the old adage, you know, necessity is the mother of invention. And in the end, if you're a performer, you want to get out and be in front of your fans, whether it's to make money or to do a fundraiser or just to entertain the folks and exercise your muscle. You realize, like, you know what, I can do this. I can sing in my bathroom, and or I can set up in the basement and use my PA or whatever I have here and make it fun. You know, Will Daly, who we both know and have worked with, has done this over and over again. He's raised a ton of money for local service industry folks in Boston at the various clubs he's performed at. I produce a podcast called Boston Venue, the Channel Podcast. We're going to start this coming Friday. doing noontime concerts featuring headliners from the channel 40 years ago, playing live on Facebook. And so John Butcher will be performing live at noon from his house. We're going to use Zoom to throw it out to Facebook and have it air there. We'll have a tip jar so we can raise money for the musicians that are affected and some of the industry folks as right. well, and Right Turn, great charity organization.
Great charity.
In that it becomes the new, hey, you know, there's an alternate way to make this work and make it viable. And they could easily adapt and put a call to action to make it a fundraiser, add a tip jar, add a link to donate to whatever cause you want to contribute to. And you can still go through your archives and make new entertainment, make it interesting, and make it viable for the fans to still be a part of your life and still have a vibrant community.
Exactly. And the fact of the matter is, if you're waiting for the doors to open, you're going to lose.
This is the time where you get to reinvent yourself. You know, and we're talking a lot about entertainers, and but just for any sort of business, this is the time to sit, think about the things that you haven't been super psyched about, and you can change it. There is the time now.
You mentioned Aaron actually was talking about what's the list, and this is something that go through your accounting. When's the last time you actually went through
organize your files? Yeah. I mean, yes, yeah. Exactly. Go through, figure out what subscriptions you're paying for. I mean, I know I have a couple of subscriptions that I found for just online services that I no longer need, but I had just been, they were just there. I forgot to cancel them. So now I can cancel them. I have files that, you know, dating back 10 years. Maybe I can go through those files and actually have some real organization to it. I can rearrange the way my office works, so it works a little bit better. These things that I didn't have time to do when I felt like I was getting, like, had to hit deadline after deadline after deadline, you know, selling, getting new clients, those things aren't the day-to-day anymore. So make getting organized and cleaning and happier in your space.
Well, because when things open up, you're going to have a better understanding of where you are right now. And I think when you're swimming, you don't think about swimming, you're just doing
doing it.
And so all of a sudden, now we have the opportunity to think about what we're going to do next. Is this the right way? You were talking about Legal Seafood.
Yeah.
And what was the point that he made?
So he was looking at his menus and how Legal Seafood's, you know, they're going to have to do some changes. And he said, do I need 150 different wines? It was in the Boston Globe today. And he said, no, I don't need 150 wines. I need to maybe I need to start looking at selling some of the seafood that we get from our distributors. And actually, one of our good friends, Laura Raposa, she has a place in Duxbury called The Foodsmith. And so she's partnered with one of her distributors, and they've started now doing produce boxes. So it's kind of like, a grab bag of whatever is available, but you sign up for these subscription produce boxes and you do it through The Foodsmith. She's also doing these wonderful catered meals. And that's another thing that, you know, I'm not a big takeout person, but these catered meals that the restaurants have started putting together, these kits, that's so fun.
We had the opportunity to sample the Rail Trail pizza thing. When they give everything to you in a box, you take it, you make your pizza the way you want to make it, and you do it. Now it's an activity that you have with your kids. It's something to occupy an hour's worth of your time. You drink a glass of wine and have a beer while you're making dinner.
And it feels indulgent.
And it's just pizza. So, you know, if they hadn't experienced this pandemic, they wouldn't be saying, oh, let's take our awesome pizza dough and our awesome sauces and just give them to people, right? But you know what? Now they're realizing, wow, there are people coming to our place that never came to our place before. The business was thriving. They had a wonderful system. You stand outside 6 feet apart until they text you. You walk inside. You don't touch anything except they give you the bag because your transaction has already been processed. So you're not even pulling your credit card out. They've already done it electronically beforehand. So I'm looking at that saying, well, that's a really great system because guess what? That makes it super efficient. I don't waste any time in line. I don't waste any time tipping people or doing whatever. They're taking some overhead out of their business. It's going to be how people go forward. They're going to be able to pay their rent and pay people to work there while that happens. But when things finally return to normal, I imagine that they're going to keep that drive up thing going because you're going to appreciate people like us are going to be just driving the car up, grabbing my stuff and going home. And that's the way I want to consume. So
I want to also add that they sell cocktail kits.
People also selling groceries through, like we talked about that. I think that's great because now the distributors and the small local farms and the small local dairies are more important than ever because you've got farmers that are crushing all their eggs, disposing of their livestock and dumping milk right now en masse. Ridiculously. So the horrifying waste of food that's happening right now while people are hungry and can't afford things, is boggles the mind. But now I'm looking at a situation where that local farmer who only does 1,000 eggs a week is still able to sustain his business. So small business has become one of the things that's actually keeping us going right now. Because if I have to rely on the idiots at Tyson Food to produce our pork now, guess what? You mismanage your business now, you're going to blame it on coronavirus, but at the end of the day, you're just not doing a good business.
Right. And for all those farmers that have so much leftover produce and the livestock they have to dispose of, to use a euphemism, how can we help create a new distribution system, essentially, that becomes, you take the CSAs that become popular in certain pockets of the country, make them larger and make them easier and more accessible for more people to take advantage of, especially for the people that were already suffering from food insecurity before this all happened, and help them to get good, healthy, nutritious food. They're not relying on junk food from the corner store, that it's good, healthy, nutritious food. They're getting it at either for free or at a very low cost that makes it viable for them. It's an opportunity to help and reinvent and fix holes in our supply chain and our society that have existed and are just now being exploited because of what's happening with the coronavirus. There was a study that came out yesterday that like half the people that have gained unemployment over the past few weeks make more in unemployment than they did in their jobs. It tells you that structurally our system is broken. If you're making more money, unemployment doesn't make you wealthy. So if you're making more money on unemployment than you were making your job, structurally the economy is broken, and we're seeing it demonstrated now.
You're talking, first of all, the waste was already there. What the pandemic done is put a magnifying glass on that waste. What the distribution was already inefficient. What the virus did was put a magnifying glass on how weak that distribution was. The treatment of the workers was always bad. The virus just put a magnifying glass on that. Blaming the virus for this is just poor business for a lot of people. And quite frankly, I'm happy to see Tyson go out of business if that's what happens. And suddenly the factory gets taken over by somebody who wants to do it responsibly and take care of their workers. Because as a consumer, I want the faith that my food supply is secure and safe and being done properly. I'm not looking to appease the board of directors. Because now we start to see like, wow, maybe just insane profit isn't really great for everybody. Maybe making sure we have a healthy, stable economy with healthy people is great for everybody, right?
Yes, especially in a consumer economy that it drives so much of our activity. Yeah. If people don't have money to spend, guess what? There is no economy. And this is not gonna be some quick bounce back, despite the rosy projections coming from the White House at these fantastical press conferences every afternoon. We're not going to have a sudden bounce back in July and have a V-shaped recovery. We're just, unfortunately, we just aren't. It's not the way things are going to happen. So you have to adapt to this new paradigm. And while we do so, to say maybe our system is broken because of the way money corrupts our politics, but let's make sure that we're actually taking care of all 300 million people in this country and not just the wealthiest few that control the distribution of means.
Right, exactly. And that's a great point. I think that what the other thing is that the new heroes and the new villains that we're seeing arise from this, we've talked about this a couple of times. I'm going to bring it back out again, because every single week, once again, the line gets clearer and the glass gets more refined onto who's doing it right and who's doing it wrong. New heroes, obviously the grocery store workers, those people who are just getting that stuff out there and trying to smile as they make their minimum wage. Thankful they have a job because they have friends who were very well paid who are suddenly now on the unemployment line. So the grocery worker that was looked down on a year ago or passed over a year ago is suddenly the guy that's making a steady income and taking care of his family. Wow, that's perspective. So now that's a bit of a new hero, because if he doesn't come to work, then you're not gonna get your food. And now we have to, that has to be important.
Doctors, as that normalizes in a year or two from now, how do we ensure to whatever way we're able to that we don't revert to looking down on those people again?
I agree. Right. How do you do that? Right. And I want to be a part of that that revolution.
On the other side of it too, healthcare workers, people who work in nursing homes right now, nursing homes are having probably the worst time ever. And what I see is the for-profit nursing home models where we're just putting a lot of beds and really doing minimum care for people have turned out just, once again, like the cruise industry, their flaws are just so clear for everyone to see right now that maybe that's not the way to take care of your parents or grandparents if this time comes up going forward. Maybe we can change that, still provide profit to people who want to do this business, but at the same time realize when you run it badly, it affects all of us. I want to mention the villains. Disney, wow. I'm not going to subscribe to Disney Plus. They got 30 million subscribers in April, and then they laid off 100,000 people 2 weeks later.
Right.
That makes absolutely no sense. The Lakers, why did you even apply for the PPP? What are you doing? We gave it back. Oh, did you? You gave it back because you were threatened and you got caught, just like Harvard got caught.
And Shake Shack.
Yeah, and Columbia University.
By the way, Shake Shack, never going to go.
Columbia University, guess what? If your students went home, got sent home because of the pandemic, and they can't live in the dorms, you can't charge them for the dorms that they can't live in. They're not given a choice. You need to give them their money back. And schooling somebody virtually means that you have lower infrastructure, so you need to give them some of their money back. So this is happening universities across the world. People dropping $70,000 of their own money to go to school, suddenly going over Zoom. Right? I'm sorry. You're going to have to give me some of that money back. I'm not paying a loan for $68,000 to take classes on Zoom. That's Harvard Extension School. It costs a lot less, you know?
Right. And also, it exposes what we've already known for a long time, but to a wider audience, that our higher education system is such a racket. $70,000 a year for college, come on. And the only reason is because the loans are federally guaranteed, so they don't care if they're going to saddle these kids up with, you know, $500,000 in loans by the time they graduate. Schools don't care. They got their money. The kids get sent off into the workforce, and they're delayed by a decade and a half because they're paying off these loans that are crushing them.
Right. The debt has to change. How we structure the debt going forward has to change. This crisis will break the back of how debt is structured in this country, and that's going to happen.
And it's
change.
Not going to be good for the most wealthy either. And I know the most wealthy want to put off making these decisions because it will affect their bottom line, but it's going to affect their bottom line eventually anyway.
One of my new villains that I added to the list is the NCAA. I've never liked the NCAA. They absolutely take advantage of college athletes, make a lot of money, and do a lot of sketchy things with that money. They had $500 million that was in reserve for pandemic insurance if they ever had to cancel a tournament. Did you know what they just found out? All that money's gone. They spent all their money, and now they want to get bailed out because they're not going to be able to do the tournament. Well, wow. So you deliberately ruined your parachute, and now you want me to give you another one. You know what? Goodbye. I don't need you. Nobody actually needs college sports. They really don't. It's actually the exact opposite of what we're talking about here. When did college sports ever benefit the student? So this kid's got $68,000 in debt, and he has to pay it. But the NCAA doesn't want to pay this because they didn't get the Final Four. That contrast is pretty hard to ignore now. What are we going to do? Like, say it's okay?
You're also going to see a number of colleges fail over the next year or so. You're going to see a lot of schools closing. They just can't sustain themselves. The business models are bad, especially a lot of smaller schools, and they're going to be gone. And it's sad to a degree, but it's the reality of shaking out the marketplace. And hopefully other schools will recognize we need to change how we manage our finances and how we structure our pricing tiers to make it affordable for the long term and serve more people versus trying to just make $70,000, and especially the international students that they rely on to pay the full freight. Not going to be able to do that anymore.
So we have more tips on how to do better Zoom meetings. We'll be sharing that as well, either late this week or early next week. I will mention very quickly, if you didn't have a beard before this, don't start one now. And for God's sakes, people, wear pants.
Yeah, if you're good, please.
And
please
be aware of your background, people. Oh my God. So I mean, the irony is that as we do more and more of this, we're seeing more people than we want to. I guess
more of people than we want to.
Yeah.
But I'm never going to tire of seeing you. So thank you very much, David, for being on Business Beat with us. I'm Ian Barrett.
I'm Erin Hayes.
And we love having you guys here. We hope that this show helped you through. We're going to provide resources in the links going forward. And if you got any questions for us, please reach out to us. And we'll see you all again next week.